My name's Janet Williamson, I'm from the TUC. I think if you look back at what the trade union movement was campaigning on in relation to the financial sector and companies in general, I suppose, before the financial crisis, there's a direct line of continuity between the themes that we were campaigning on then, back in 2006 and 2007, and what's happened in the financial crisis. So we were campaigning around private equity and the idea that companies could be sort of bought and sold like a bag of sugar, you know, regardless of the actual long-term impact on the company and its productive future. And we were campaigning about a model of responsible capitalism in which investors would be more engaged with the companies whose shares they hold and would actually act as responsible owners rather than sort of absentee landlords in relation to those companies. We were campaigning around corporate governance and models of corporate governance and, you know, talking about what kinds of corporate governance models actually boost sort of long-term economic growth and productive capacity within companies. And all of those themes have been relevant in the financial crisis and the way it's been played out. Some of the work has been sort of displaced in the sense that now we're talking much more about deficit reduction or lack of deficit reduction rather than private equity. But many of the themes really are the same as before. I think trade unions have done a lot. I'm sure they could always have done more. So there has been a lot of campaigning around specific aspects of banking reform and financial sector reform. I mean, we've tried, I think, to kind of, coalesce our forces at the international level, which has been where a lot of, you know, these debates have been taking place. And we've tried to sort of act, you know, to speak with one voice on an international level at, you know, the different G20 summits and, you know, other sort of meetings that have been taking place, and then sort of more specifically with input to different international committees that are looking at different areas of this. I think it's been difficult for anybody, including the trade union movement, to articulate one vision of an alternative financial sector future. So I think it's probably true that we've fired on different issues simultaneously. And there probably is a role for a kind of overall vision to be articulated perhaps a little bit more clearly than has been the case. But I think we have been making our voice heard. Well, I think on one level there's so many that it's hard to know where to start. If I can just pull out a few sort of themes that we would like to see addressed. One is around the whole area of sort of consumer protection, I suppose. And we would like to see a much greater level of consumer protection in financial, you know, products and services in place, with far less emphasis on information and consumer choice, and much more emphasis on real sort of minimum standards of products and services, so that it's much harder for people to kind of, you know, make a so-called bad financial choice. And actually, a lot of those products and services that offer poor value or no value to consumers simply aren't available. Then, in terms of the sort of the banking system as a whole, we'd like to see a much greater sort of diversity of corporate models, if you like, and a shift away from the emphasis on the PLC and shareholder primacy within banks, and, you know, far more emphasis on sort of mutuals and other models which don't rely on shareholder primacy as the sort of, as their kind of driver. And I think there's a sort of third area of kind of international regulation that spans so many different sort of issues that, you know, I don't want to kind of go through them all, but there needs to be far greater kind of international coordination and a difference. Reform also of the structures in which all these decisions are made, so that the voices of ordinary people, trade unions, you know, NGOs and so on, actually are heard in some of these debates, rather than them being taken, decisions being taken behind, you know, closed doors. I think the TUC has been very, very clear that we believe that growth is the best way to address the budget deficits which have been caused by the financial crisis and the need to bail out the banks and so on and so forth. And we don't think that the kind of cuts that are being implemented by the current coalition government represent a budget for growth at all. You know, we think that it will actually, in the end, lead to the need for even greater... Well, we think that the cuts being proposed will actually increase the budget deficit by kind of cutting off growth before it's really started to come back. And the TUC has argued that very, very hard and clearly, but I think it's an argument that needs to be made again and again and again and again, because at the moment it doesn't feel as though that argument is being fully heard across the country, and I don't think it necessarily will be until people really start to feel the effects of the budget cuts, you know, on their pockets, on their livelihoods, on their public services. And then I think it will come home to roost what the kind of figures that Osborne is talking about really means to ordinary people. But I think the scale of the cuts that the government is talking about are so huge that it's very difficult for anybody, you know, for me or for you or for the public, to really take in what they will mean in practice. I think what is absolutely clear is that they won't be able to carry out that scale of cuts without it having a direct impact upon frontline services. So the claim that that cuts of this scale can be implemented by cutting back office jobs that apparently have no, you know, impact on frontline services is absolutely, totally wrong. Yes, I mean, we believe that the impact on jobs will be pretty disastrous, and particularly in regions which already are struggling in terms of jobs. And there's no impact, there's no evidence at all that the private sector will miraculously replace the public sector in areas where the public sector is cut. All the evidence points to the contrary, that in fact, as you take demand out of a local economy, you know, other sectors will be affected, retail, you know, local services and so on. So we think that the cuts in public sector jobs, far from generating private sector job growth, will actually generate more private sector job cuts. And what we'll end up with is a burgeoning dole queue, higher income support GSA payments, all defeating the government's apparent objective of cutting the budget deficit. So we would see these proposals for such savage cuts as entirely self-defeating, even in their own objective. Well, I assume that they actually believe that what they are doing will work. It seems fairly extraordinary in the face of the evidence to the contrary. But I think what they're doing is adopting an agenda that they've always believed in. They've always believed in an economic model with a very lean state, a very a burgeoning private sector, and apparently they appear to believe that simply cutting the state is the way to stimulate the private sector. I think it's that linkage that they've got completely wrong. I think that they must recognise that implementing the policies that they've outlined will take them straight into major confrontations with public sector unions, and this is clearly not something that they are shying away from at all, and it does seem that it's an inevitable consequence of what they've outlined. But I think that they could find their strategy very risky politically, because they are hardly going to the policies they're pursuing are not going to garner support for the government from public sector workers, but I think they're equally unlikely to garner support ultimately from private sector workers, because actually more people are going to feel insecure about their future as a result of these proposals than did before. And I think there's not a message coming from the government that it really cares about the future of individuals, whether public sector or private sector. That's not a message that I'm hearing from the government, and I think that that's not a positive or progressive political... Well, there's a problem there for the government if they're trying to, you know, win support, which ultimately I think will come home to roost. Well, the real scandal here is the very poor level of pension provision which most workers in the private sector have. I mean, the vast majority of workers in the private sector have very, very little, very poor levels of pension provision for the future. Employers have really walked away from what they used to see as their responsibility to provide a decent pension for their workforce. Now most private sector workers are not saving anywhere near enough for their retirement. And at the moment, obviously, employer compulsion and auto-enrolment, if they're not thrown away by the new government, if they remain, that this will change. But at the moment, there's no compulsion upon employers to provide for their for the pensions for their workforce for the future. And I mean, that's really where the scandal lies. The vast majority of public sector workers receive really quite low levels of pensions, just, you know, a few thousand a year is the sort of, you know, average for, you know, your kind of average health worker or whatever. So there is a major problem with the gap between public sector and private sector work pension provision. But the problem lies with the private sector rather than with the public sector. And with the private sector, you also have the massive disparities between, you know, what company directors' pension pots look like and the models of set of pension provision which they enjoy and what they provide for their own workforce. So you have a kind of, a double standard there as well. So there's clearly a need for change, but I think the campaign to represent public sector pension provision as being gold-plated is simply wrong and insidious. Well, the role of the unions and the public sector unions is to defend the interests of their members, regardless of who's in power. And I mean, the TUC and the unions were making the same arguments about public sector pensions before the election as we are now. So I mean, our message hasn't changed. I think the threat to public sector pensions is a lot greater than it was, but there were issues there being raised before, and you know, the role of the unions is to defend our members' interests, you know, in whatever circumstances.